screen zooming. Interestingly enough, HP has been a client at one point, but that doesn't mean I knew anything about Brianna's topic. So stepping in here and being a fill-in really started, about 5 o'clock yesterday afternoon with this email from Brianna. Social media across the organization, tomorrow at 12:45. Thank you, smiley face. That's how easy of a mark I am. 3 thank yous and a smiley face will get me to stay up all night to do a new presentation. So from that, I thought, well, maybe I can go into the wide array of content I had brought along with me to San Francisco and find something to talk about today. I looked far and wide for inspiration in multiple places last night to think about how do I really summon my creative powers, and started to imagine, well, maybe this is a great creative opportunity. So what if I took the constraint of taking Lauren's topic, Lauren's major points that she was making, and with no knowledge of what she was going to talk about specifically, try and build a brain zooming presentation around exercises and tools that you can use to engage your organization, to build relationships, and to integrate social, but importantly, how engagement ties to strategy for the organization. So that's really the genesis of this presentation today about models to think about social media engagement across the organization. I just put them up there because they look like models. There will be no actual supermodels within any of the rest of the presentation. So one of the points is this idea of social intersects at so many parts of the business. Now, I think a few years ago when we started talking about this topic, that was maybe a revolutionary idea for people. It's like, well, no, social media is sort of off to the side, and it's a communications tactic, and, you know, go get me on a Twitter and go get me a Facebook. But I think there's more understanding of it, but I'm not sure that every organization really still gets the power of social and how it does interact with every part of the brand. Something that we use with customers and clients to think about brand very holistically is this brand wheel. That at the center of your brand and that promise that you're making to your customers, but also to prospects and other stakeholders, it's not what a lot of people have a fairly narrow sense of brand, that, well, it's a logo and it's a color scheme and it's, you know, all marketing and identity. That's certainly an important part of it. But it involves your people, your team, the values, the culture of the organization, the products and services, the experience that you're creating for your customers, your stakeholders, and all the ways that you reinforce that. And when you think about it, social feeds its way into all those things, whether it's a way of communication among your employees, your brand out to your customers back to you, something that we didn't have 15 and 20 years ago in any kind of public way, that you could find out, well, I'm a customer, I'm a prospect. What do a lot of other customers think about this? So it's a pretty revolutionary change. If you break that apart and start thinking about it as departments in an organization, this is a pretty good starting list to say, okay, as we look at our brand, whether it's complex like HP or it's a much simpler brand, where does social fit in? Where is it part of communications? Where is it part of creating an experience? Where is it part of growing the business? How does it factor in? And start thinking about what kind of representation do we have? And I think as well, this idea of external partners, you know, they are increasingly, in this world, part of delivering that promise. They aren't employees, they're contractors. Or you've got other multiple brands coming together to provide services or create products. We flip this around, and, you know, something we'll use with clients is basically to say, here's that list in a little bit different fashion, but encourage us to sit down at the start of thinking about how a social strategy is going to be created and say, who's on board right now? Who's involved in this? Who isn't but should be? And are there departments here that clearly don't have a role? And really try and push back if there's a particular department on here that says, yeah, we're just really not tied into social in any way. Now, for you as social media and content marketing and maybe even some operations professionals, that provides a challenge in that how are you going to bring those people in? How do you create those types of relationships? And that's a lot of what we'll try and talk about today is how you look at that strategically and find that value for both parties. There are certainly cultural barriers that still exist to this. And I really get a sense of this. So I spoke at the Strategy Summit in New York last fall, and I had multiple people come up to me afterwards in regulated industries, business-to-business industries, talking about, well, we're not allowed to talk about our brand on social. It was like, you're kidding me. It's like, no. I'm in a social role. We're supposed to do content marketing, and the management doesn't want us to talk about it, and I don't know what to do. And I said, well, there's really two paths here to look at, and I'll talk about the more organizational path next is, but it really was interesting is because it became almost a career counseling session for a couple of people to say, you know what? At this time, in this environment, if you're in a business that doesn't get that, and that's your charge, you need to get the heck out of there. You need to find another path and start to do something else because you're going to stagnate in your career. But if you think there's a chance, if you see how to start to influence it, this is a list you really need to start to grapple with, is here's some of the cultural barriers that may still be out there, maybe in some of your organizations. Maybe this group isn't that different than the group that showed up in New York, to say, how do we stand? Are these, you know, no issue for us right now? Or are there some major issues up there in terms of communication, in terms of coordination within a company, how people interact, how they share information, their willingness to be transparent and vulnerable in front of a customer? Because if not, to try and get collaboration in the organization and get engagement for social, and particularly not just sharing content, but thinking about it as part of creating a service experience, it's going to be a major challenge. So how do you, you know, take that self-assessment of your brand and see where do we stack up, and do we still have some of these cultural barriers, and what's our strategy going to be to try and either tackle those or circumvent those so that we can be more effective in making social a broad part of what we do. Second thing was the idea of how do you start to reach out and create those strong relationships. Now, any fill-in presenter will let you know it is obligatory. You have to have a kid picture in the presentation at some point, just so, you know, I didn't get any oohs or ahs. And I'd love to say these cute kids were mine. They're actually my neighbor kids. That's Dune here and his little twin, as they're known on Facebook, the Little Brothers. But anyway, they stopped by one day. So they're a pretty tight-knit group. They've got, obviously, a family relationship. But how do you start to look into your organization and say, how are we building relationships and bringing other people who are either reluctant or haven't seen the role that they could play in social engagement into the mix? So we do a lot on collaboration in social, but more particularly in strategy and trying to bring employees in to help shape organizational strategies. And there's a couple of ways that when we start to work with a client, we want to think about who's participating. So I want to go through both these models. And as everything I talk about, and if you were in the workshop yesterday, you heard me say, you can go and use all this stuff right now. Even though I'm talking about stuff we use, it's all like you can take it and start to run with it. So if you're trying to reach out in the organization and you figured out first the departments, the functions that need to be involved, as you start to think about the individuals, think about it this way, and not so much about titles, although obviously you need leaders in place and they've got to be bought into it, but think about three groups that we find consistently leads to the best strategic, the best innovative thinking. The first is general management. So who are the people in your organization that have profit and loss responsibility? Typically sales, an operations role. I mean, these are the people who are managing the front lines. They need to be bought in. They need to be brought into the process. Second group is people with functional responsibilities. So accounting or finance or marketing or whatever, all those functional areas. They've got to be a part of it. And we've got that list before is most of those areas that need to be in there. And then third is those innovators in the organization. And they may be in any type of department, but they're the people who are actually thinking about things in new ways, and they see your business with a different kind of mindset. Now, a lot of times when you're trying to think about things in a new creative way, you say, well, let's load up on the creative people because they're going to see things. We found that's not exactly the best way to go. It's really more important to have, you know, typically 40 or 50% of general management people, you know, maybe 30% of functional people, and a very small part of the innovators, because you don't need necessarily an entire group of innovators to come up with new ways to engage, new ways to use social. You just need them to sort of stir up the pot a little bit, to sort of think about things in a different way, but you still have to have those people in the line responsibility and functional responsibilities. So we talked about operations and sort of departments first. Now this is sort of individuals within departments. Something else is we've done more community collaboration over the last few years and, you know, had hundreds of people come into some of these collaboration sessions. We found it goes beyond this thinking mindset into different types of voices that you want to start to involve. And there's three of those as well. The first is the familiar voices. These are the people who you typically will see show up in meetings or on task forces or in workshops. They're probably people who've been in the organization a long time. They know a lot of people. They know process, particularly in this area, communications process, customer experience process. They're the people who bring that familiar point of view. The second group, and I have developed a new appreciation for them over the last few years, are the challengers. They're the people who will, by gosh, say, I don't agree with that, or we're down a wrong path, or this doesn't make any sense. Or even the people who say, we've done it like that before and it doesn't work. And a lot of times when you think about innovation and new ideas, you say, don't let those people in because they'll tell us our ideas are bad. But we found if you can involve those people, understand their issues, and really sort of channel their activity to help push on ideas, make sure the idea that has a lot of momentum is really sound, they can play a really valuable role. And then the third is the emerging voices in the organization. The people who maybe because of their tenure in the organization would never make it into some kind of a conversation about engagement and how social is going to be a part of creating a customer experience. How are you going to bring those in? Maybe people, and probably most of you in the room, who are more digitally savvy. You grew up amid the internet and apps and are very comfortable there. If you're a senior person and trying to make this change happen and you're ignoring this group, you're missing out on an important group. So, you know, think about as you collaborate across the organization, departments and functions, the types of thinking that people are going to bring to it, and then the types of voices that will come to the table. If you can bring that mix together, you'll have a lot stronger strategy and you're paving the way for a lot stronger implementation as well. An important question, something we talked about in this workshop yesterday, and I've heard it in sessions already this morning. The way we phrase it is, what are we trying to achieve? As you bring together these parties that maybe, again, don't exactly see how they fit into social or fit into customer engagement, find out, ask that question of, well, what's important to you about this and what's important to us? And look for those areas of overlap and those areas of disagreement, trying to understand what those agreement, you know, those areas of disagreement might be. It's interesting, we've used this actually, I started off in a transportation company, so I was doing what became brain zooming inside of a corporate environment. And at one point, we facilitated a session with one of our competitors. So we had people from two competing companies in the room. And it was interesting to use some of these tools and see that, you know, a question like, what are we trying to achieve in an open, transparent conversation can get parties that see things very differently and potentially are competitive in the marketplace to actually start to open up and share with one another. So we call it the granddaddy of strategy questions, a tremendously powerful question if you're trying to engage and collaborate more broadly. What about corporate terrorists? The people that you know, they're going to show up at a certain point. This is a particular type of challenger who maybe isn't as emotionally or intellectually honest. They're going to save their critique or their challenge for the very last minute and try and sabotage that because they've learned throughout their career, I can throw stones at the right time and I can stop progress or I can stop a different way of doing things. We actually have an engagement right now with a corporate terrorist. It's not a social project. But I was talking to our client, it's about innovation and new products, and he was telling me about one of the people on his team, said he is responsible for innovation, but he sort of keeps everything very close at hand. He doesn't really share information about the research he does, and he's been there a long time, and when his new boss came in and tried to get him to put metrics in place for job performance, he's like, well, I'm not going to do that. I said, well, you say he's been there a long time. He said, yeah, he's been there 15 years. I said, was he a candidate for your job? He said, yeah. He thought he was owed the job. And when the management told him to apply, he said, I'm not going to apply for it. Either it's mine or that's it. I'm not applying for it. I said, yeah, he sounds like a corporate terrorist. He said, well, yeah, that's what he is. I said, you know what we're going to do? I said, we're going to involve him on the project team. I know it will create some pain. I know it will create some challenge. But he's going to have to challenge all the way through, because if he tries to challenge later, he's going to look pretty foolish, and we'll be able to sort of play this out that, well, you've been along on the whole ride. You never voiced a concern about this. And it's been interesting. Like I said, we're in the middle of this. The session isn't until later in February. He's been really good, but he's also started to reveal some of his biases. And anything that gets close to him, he doesn't want us to look at. He doesn't want us to examine. Nobody needs to talk about that. So think about it. If you know those corporate terrorists are out there, don't exclude them from the process, because they'll get you later. Bring them in early and engage them. That's a real fundamental thing to build these strong relationships. We've got a piece on collaboration. It's at info.brainzooming.com/collaborate if you want to go out and get it. It's free. But it talks about a lot of how we approach strategic collaboration and some of the things that you can start to look for in terms of how do I bring people in. It talks about those voices and those different perspectives. So it's a real handy tool and sort of the guide that we go to as we're working with clients. And again, tools that you can take and use right away, info.brainzooming.com/collaborate to go a little deeper on that piece of it. So when you've got the foundation in place with the people and organizationally, how do you start to put together all the varied pieces with social and how that ties back into either communication or to experience for the customer side? It's a picture of the Starbucks mobile app and their rollout. So who uses that? A good number of people. So the idea that you can order, come in and get it. Well, and probably a lot of you have experienced this, Starbucks had to change that over time. They actually had to be pretty defined about, don't get in line, that's not the point of it, go over here because here's where your items are, here's where your coffee is, and you can go right there and grab it. It's an interesting example of a service blueprinting opportunity, and a couple of questions that we try and use is, what are we trying to do right now to deliver a great experience for our customers? And what could we do differently, or when could we do something differently to even enhance that experience? If you're thinking about trying to collaborate more broadly with social and engagement and customer experience, those are two really important questions. And here's a way that we sort of adapted from Arizona State. I don't know if anybody's familiar, but they have a Center for Services Leadership. It's a great organization, not only for their traditional students, for executives and service businesses to think about how do you provide services. And in a world where increasingly, even if you're manufacturing something, you're providing a service, it's really great thinking about this. This is a way to think about customer experience and get people in an organization to start to collaborate and see what do we do now, what can we do in the future. So along the left, the first colored column, you know, how do we reinforce our brand promise today? And we look at a variety of dimensions. At the top, what are the customer actions? What actions do we expect the customers to take so that this is successful? And you certainly see that in the Starbucks example. We're expecting customers to look for a sign, to go around the line. That's what we're going to have this be successful. How does the staff interact with customers? What visual cues, that sign that was there, that reinforced that for the customer? What's the interaction with staff behind the scenes? And then what support processes are in place? It's a great way to take that, you know, in that kind of a format or some other format, and get a group to start to think about how do we change customer experience? What does it look like right now? And where do we see gaps that we maybe need to address? As an example of how we've used that, there's an organization, they're in San Jose, and they're in Denver, Colorado, called RAFT, and it's Resource Area for Teachers, Area for Teachers. Basically, what they do is they take recycled items or discarded items and package them up into STEM kits and other teachers' aids and sell them at 5 and 10 cents on the dollar, because if you're familiar with elementary education, teachers put a lot of their own money back into supplying their classrooms. So it's a great organization, and they used to talk about it as the Costco for teachers, and we actually helped them sort of clean up that language and talk more about what they did in a very positive way. Once we got that brand platform in place to think about, well, how does that brand promise translate to engagement with teachers in their retail space, we used that very exercise. And this is one of the posters. So the brand promise dimension was educational expertise. So when teachers came to the retail location, they wanted them to have a sense of Raft isn't just selling things at 5 and 10 cents on the dollar. The staff, the way we've prepared kits, the information that we can share with teachers all show that there's, at the heart of it, there's educational knowledge and a discipline to how they're doing things. So along the left was what they did right now. And if you see, there's a lot of post-it notes above this line of customer actions and staff interactions with customers. What that started to suggest was this is heavily dependent on the staff that's on the floor at that time and the staff that are even in the organization. And in an organization where there's a lot of turnover, it's like if we don't have the right mix of people, all of a sudden this promise and this engagement starts to fall down. So the innovation was all about over here, what does the staff do behind the scenes and what are the support processes in place that we take this out of being very person-dependent and actually make it part of the organization overall, part of the brand, something that it can be replicated and produced no matter who's on the floor, no matter who's in the organization. We've got the training, we've got the resources and process. So a way you can use that in a collaborative setting to think about what are we doing now and how can we improve that customer experience and how does social fit into that? We're actually in the process of redesigning this poster that will have a more explicit social and digital dimension to it as well, because I think it's time that that needs to be a part of that consideration. Take that and then create a plan from it. An important thing when you're trying to get collaboration across an organization is documenting things. It's too easy. I had a friend who used to talk about corporate amnesia. People would come into a room and make these big pronouncements, and then they'd go out and forget about it. Documenting things when you're having plans, and even as it's an interim plan, is a great way to keep the organization coming back to it and saying, we've made these decisions. We understand where we're going, and it's a great time saver versus going back through the same topics, project meeting after project meeting, as I'm sure probably some of you have experienced. Finally, how do you anticipate future issues? A couple of ways there that we've used, and I think are handy little exercises. You know, you can ask people, you know, what are the strengths and weaknesses, or what are opportunities and threats, or what's going to be important in the organization, and you sort of get the standard answer. So a lot of times we try and use different types of questions to help people think about standard business issues in a little bit different way. One of them is this, what will have happened? So instead of asking people about, well, what will lead to success looking forward or what will lead to failure looking forward that we need to account for, we take them out a certain amount of time, maybe 24 months or 36 months. You know, in this case, if you're looking at a change in engagement, maybe that's over the course of 18 months. We're going to change the engagement, bring social into it more specifically, and say, well, let's go out 18 months and let's look back to today. And say, if we look back 18 months from now and say, this was an absolutely outrageous success, we more than delivered on the expectations and everything we were trying to do, what happened? What could we control? What did we get lucky at? What things came together that led to that outrageous success? And document all those things. You can flip it around then and say, suppose we're out 18 months from now and it's been a miserable failure. Our plans to engage, to use social more explicitly, don't work. Customers were dissatisfied, or there was a lot of negative chatter through Facebook or other channels about our experience. What were the factors there? What happened? Are there things we didn't do? Are there things we didn't account for? Are there things that it wasn't clear that they were going to understand? And think through those. It's a great exercise to think up front about the critical success factors that you need to account for in your strategy and in your implementation. Another great question to look ahead is this one. How do we anticipate black swans? We are working with a state forester to work on strategy and their sort of overall strategy, but also engagement. And the state forester had just read the book Black Swans. So I don't know if anybody's familiar with it, but it's this theory that there are major forces that happen in business and happen in society, and we can't necessarily predict them, but they change everything. The internet, two planes crashing into the World Trade Center on 9/11. That just fundamentally change things. And the part of the theory is that they're unpredictable. And the state forester said, I want to predict them. It's like, well, that's a little bit of a challenge because by definition we can't, but we'll try and come up with an exercise. So I scratched my head, thought, how can we do this? And I don't know, but who's seen the movie Ghostbusters? those people? Yeah. And I thought about, wait a minute, there's a scene in Ghostbusters where, you know, they've been challenged and they're told that the first thing that they think of will destroy them. And what happens? Ray thinks about the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man, the simplest, most harmless thing he loved as a child who could never destroy them. And then this 150-pound Marshmallow Man comes and throws fire and marshmallow at them. It was like, that's it. It's not about trying to anticipate all the bad things that are going to happen. The secret to the exercise is think about what are all the things that work really well right now that we don't even think about them anymore. The processes that are out of sight and out of mind. The customer engagement things that just, boy, they run like crazy. Think about those things and say, well, suppose they didn't run like crazy. Suppose something happened that they got disrupted. Now what would we do? How would we recover? So another exercise is you think about a broader approach to social and collaboration to identify those potential roadblocks, those potential pitfalls way up front. So what will have happened? And then think about the stuff that works really well, and what would you do if it didn't start to work? Great strategy tools to use. Another thing that's a really handy way, so if you work through this approach, you're going to have a lot of ideas, a lot of possibilities, probably way more than you can ever do. Here's a really simple structure that you can use to think about how do we decide what to do. And we actually used this yesterday. Somebody came up after the workshop, and she was talking about they have content in the U.S. and content in Australia, and they sort of fight with each other. And the fact that the Australians don't appreciate the content that's coming out of the U.S., and she said, what can we do to think about it? I said, we'll take this approach to thinking about a brand promise. What do customers expect? What will they accept? And what will they reward? We use that to get to brand promises. It's also a great way to sort of go back and look at brand situations and see, well, what's really happening here? So in this case, the Australians expected Australian content, expected to be able to get to it. They didn't accept the fact that there was an overwhelming amount of U.S. content that really didn't resonate with them. And we sort of left it with the question that she needed to go back and ask is, what is the reward involved? Is there greater dissatisfaction among Australians because of this content? Are you not getting as much business? Are they not staying around as long? And if it's hurting the business, now you've got a case to come back and say, well, maybe we need two feeds or we need two different presences. If nothing's really happening on the top or bottom line or a long-term customer relationship because of it, maybe it's just a noise issue. So an interesting way to think about if you're facing a brand issue, can you break it down into expect, accept, reward as a way to diagnose it and figure out what you're going to do? Finally then, what are three other things that as you look at, you can start to put into the mix as you're maybe redesigning your customer experience in a more collaborative way to deliver best-in-class experience? So one of these, so Angelo Harms, and you heard about Angelo if you're in the workshop yesterday. So we've been in Curacao, where Angelo's head of the digital marketing for the tourist board the last couple of years, doing a workshop. So all the partners from Curacao are coming together. And one of the things we talked about with hotels and restaurants and attractions there is, how do you engage your entire workforce to be more active and social in a way that helps the experience? One of the things we think is a really powerful way is to create a really simple job description. It's 6 points. You can do it in 10 minutes. That gives people a sense of here's what we want you to do, as opposed to just telling your employees, hey, share our stuff, and they're sort of going, okay, well, what does that mean? So there's a picture of Curacao, just sort of a moment of calm. I've been blabbing here for a while, so just sort of a nice moment of calm. So here were some of the ones that we came up with. So social sharers. So if you're asking your people to share stuff, give them 3 points of sort of, here's your qualifications. You're active on social, you're connected to members of our audience, and you are willing to track our content. And what is the role involved? Stay alert for when new content comes out, reshare it within your network, and continue to grow your network. There it is. Now we're not just saying share our stuff, we're saying, hey, could you play this role for us? Another one that we had was a digital concierge. So they're knowledgeable about the property and the island and know all the places to sort of set people up to get those best types of shots. A social media expediter. So if you're in a hotel and people are sort of jammed up in a hallway or out on the beach where other people want to be because they're all trying to get their selfies and do other things, can you help them sort of expedite through that or even have guest photographers in place? So all different roles that now an employee knows, okay, I can step up to that. I've got a responsibility and I know what I can bring to it to help improve that engagement with social. So that's one thing to sort of take it up to best in class. Next one is to make sure you're turning all of your customer conversations into content ideas. And if you think about customer conversations, this is, you know, one way of looking at it, that, you know, customers have questions and they have statements along the bottom, along the x-axis, and the tone of those conversations can either be positive or negative. And based on that combination, not only do you need to address that current question or address that comment, but there's probably other customers, other clients out there that have that, and you can start to share that with them so that they have a better sense of things. So if you've got, you know, positive questions, those are education opportunities. How do you share that information on a blog or share that through your social content so that other people can get those answers? If you've got negative questions coming in, those are pain points. Maybe that does require some kind of change in the experience. If you've got negative statements, can you anticipate objections? Maybe somebody doesn't see a particular benefit that your brand provides through engagement or through the customer experience. Can you sort of proactively start to put some points out there that suggest that, well, yeah, you do that. You do deliver that benefit. And then if you've got positive comments, positive statements, those are great ways to demonstrate brand value and testimonials to get that out through social. So a little bit more orderly way to say, gosh, we have hundreds or thousands of interactions with customers every day. A lot of folks that we talk to, a lot of brands we talk to, when we say, well, can we go back and get this data? What are those interactions? They're like, nobody ever tracks it. Or we take the complaints and we never do anything about it. Don't waste those opportunities. Third thing, and it's another matrix, to think about four types of customer engagement opportunities that any brand is going to have. And it's, again, based around a matrix. I love matrices. So along the bottom is the customer experience expectation. So is it an expected part of an experience for a customer, or is it unexpected? And then along the y-axis, up and down, what's the nature of that? Is it just sort of a routine customer engagement interaction, or is there an opportunity to delight somebody? If you think about it, sort of the day in and day out customer service, it happens over here. It's routine and expected. What are we doing for customers? What's our brand promise, and how does that translate into engagement? How is social a part of that? How are we bringing the whole organization into that? As simple as that should be, so many brands screw that part of it up. And one of the big ones last year was that whole United thing where, you know, they're pulling the passenger off, they bumped him off of a seat, and it becomes a huge social media storm, becomes a legal storm. I mean, there was talk about what's the long-term impact of the brand. I'm not sure there's necessarily been that long-term impact. But I think for a brand that has had its dings over time, it certainly didn't help anything that this happened. And if you go back to that list of all the people who are involved in engagement, this involved partners. This was the security staff or the police force within the airport that was actually on the plane. And they clearly didn't have any process to engage them in, here's how we treat our customers on a United plane. So you want to make sure you get that right and don't screw up, because that's stuff that gets out there. These other three quadrants, those are great opportunities to delight customers. So an expected delight opportunity, those are your loyalty programs. Your frequent customers expect to get delighted every single time they interact with you. What is in your loyalty program and how are you engaging and where does social play a part of that? On the unexpected routine side, that's a unique twist on that daily experience. For me, this is a bakery I go get my wife donuts at, you know, every Sunday or every other Sunday, and every once in a while, they'll throw an extra donut in for free. I don't expect it. It's a little bit of a delight, not a lot for them, but it's just another way to say, you know, if I'm going to go to a bakery for a donut, I'm going to go there. The big opportunity is the unexpected and delight things. Where do you have an opportunity? And particularly social can be so good here because you can get that frontline understanding of what's going on right then with a customer to delight them in a completely unexpected way. So I want to go to another example from the airline industry. This is a Southwest example. And Southwest has had some of their dings over time too. This is in Midland, Texas, I believe. there was an American Airlines flight, and these people were on the plane for 7 or 8 hours stranded, and they finally got out in Midland, Texas, sometime at 11:30 at night, I think it says. American Airlines, the customer of American Airlines, they were given $7 food vouchers that they couldn't use until the next day in the airport because everything was shut down. Southwest went and bought pizza for the entire plane. They weren't even their customers. And they went and bought pizza for the American Airlines customers. So somebody posted it from the plane on social, and someone down here in the comments on Facebook said, that's why I fly Southwest domestically. I wish they had international flights. And Southwest intercepted and said, hey, guess what? We're about to introduce international flights. Great example. Nobody would expect that rival airline to step in and be a part of a customer service solution. Unexpected and delightful. Where are those opportunities in your brand to do those same kind of things? So, with no knowledge of HP and what they've done, we've talked through four things about finding those connected points within your organization, trying to reach out and build that strong network of partnerships across your brand, how you start to put that into a seamless interaction that sort of addresses the core of the experience and making sure that it aligns and enhances your brand promise. And then finally, what are those opportunities to deliver that improved best-in-class experience? So I think we have time maybe for one question, maybe, or two. We have one question. Anybody have a question? This has been so weird. I've been up here the whole time. Do I have to come out there to ferret out a question from somebody?
How would you see this working in a multi-branded company where you want to create some collaboration, perhaps at the corporate level, but you also have distinct brands?
I would go back to that, maybe as a starting point, go back to that brand promise wheel about expect, accept, and reward. So if you've got distinct brands, are they out there in the marketplace targeted at different segments? Are they at different needs? And say the different target segments for these brands, would they start to expect some commonality? You know, if I come to, pick a multi-brand, GM, sort of an old line brand. But, you know, if I buy a GM car, no matter the particular brand, do I expect some commonality? Now, would I accept it? And that accept is not just sort of minimum performance. It's also sort of how far you can stretch that brand. If there became, I'm buying a Chevy, and all of a sudden I start getting all this GM stuff, or there's things about a GM experience, how does that make me feel? And then reward. Can you do some testing into it to understand, based on the combinations, and that's where you can do a lot of complex market research tests or pilot things. And that's the great thing. If you're doing it digitally, it's so much easier to test things to see what's that right combination. But I think that tool is just so darn helpful. And I had a similar question at a SEMA show, maybe, which is why I went to cars. Somebody asked me about, we've got two brands and we're trying to figure out how they fit together. And it's like you can play through those on social content, you can play through it on experience. So I really offer that up as a fairly quick way to do it. Before we wrap up, I'm going to share one last thing. And this is what we call the BrainZooming Employee Buy-In Manifesto. And it's not a long manifesto, it's 5 points. But from working with a lot of brands and trying to create collaboration and seeing it work a few times, but a lot of times fall flat. And you read about a lot of instances of, we're going to engage our employees and we're going to do all these things and it just doesn't resonate. Here's 5 things that we think are important. If you take nothing away, grab a picture of these 5. For your employee's perspective, ask me to participate. And ask me in a dignified kind of way. Respect me as you ask. Listen to my ideas. Find out what I'm thinking. Find out what I'm seeing if I'm close to the customer. If I'm listening on social in a way that probably the senior management doesn't hear. Incorporate my ideas into our collective viewpoint on strategy and how we're going to go out and engage our customers. Talk to me in real words. Don't talk to me in jargon. Don't talk to me in consultant nonsense crap. Talk to me in real words. And finally, let me know what's going on. Don't just, they asked us for stuff and we never heard from them again. Keep them in the loop. If you ask somebody to collaborate, it's not just to collaborate on strategy. It's to collaborate and participate actively in the implementation and keeping them up to speed. If you can do those things, you're far down the road on successful collaboration and employee engagement that's going to change experience inside your company, change culture, and change that experience for your customers and grow those relationships and enhance them and really make your brand stand out. So again, infobrainzooming.com/collaborate if you want to get the ebook. Thank you very much. I appreciate you allowing me to step in and talk about this. And with that, I think we'll turn it back over to Brianna. Thanks.